This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Extrajudicial Execution and the Zionist Weltanschauung. The Zionists call it targeted killings, but they are extrajudicial assassinations, executions. More than 600 Palestinians have been killed in extrajudicial killings since the year 2000. Between the eruption of the Second Palestinian Intifada on September 28, 2000, and June 2006, the Palestinian Committee on Human Rights has documented that Israeli forces attempted 252 extrajudicial killing operations. According to the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, Israeli forces killed 603 Palestinians during these crimes. Statistically, the victims of this policy constitute 20% of the entire Intifada's Palestinian fatalities. Of these, 212 were bystanders who were killed during these operations. Targeted killings, assassination. In fact, targeted killings, extrajudicial executions, have been part of Zionist policy since the inception. Count Bernadette was assassinated in Jerusalem during the Zionist uprising against the British Mandate. And during the 1960s, target assassinations were the policy of the Zionists. Three mayors, Karim Khalaf of Ramallah, Bassam Shaka of Nablus, and Mustafa Nache of Hebron, were targeted with car bombs. Bassam Shaka lost both his legs. Karim Khalaf lost one of his legs in these attempted assassination attempts by the Zionists. And then targeted assassinations were the modus operandi against the members of the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization. We knew Bassam Abu Sharif of the PFLP, the Palestinian Front for the Liberation, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, who had an opening a letter. It had been a letter bomb. He lost part of his face. And there were many who were assassinated by these targeted assassinations. Also, if we go to Lebanon, it is the conclusion of the Lebanese officials that in 1982, Bashir Gemayel was assassinated by the Mossad. Targeted killings, targeted assassinations. This is the modus operandi of the Zionist state. It is the Weltanschauung.
The worldview. The worldview, Maya. Well set out by Molly Moore in the Washington Post on June 30th, 2003, Israel's lethal weapon of choice. Nazi Abu Siba, 35, died seconds after he opened the trunk of his booby-trapped car. Abdul Rahman Hamad, 33, was shot dead as he sat on his roof reading the Quran. Mohammed Abayat, 27, was killed when he picked up the receiver of a payphone that blew up outside a hospital where he was visiting his sick mother. All three men, whose deaths were described by witnesses and Palestinian officials, were militants marked for assassination, Israel's primary weapon. These targeted killings, as they are known here, were described by Israeli officials 2 years ago as exceptional measures. Now they are carried out with regularity, using missiles, bombs, tanks, booby traps, and gunfires, and they are stirring increasing disapproval from the Israeli public, reports Molly Moore in the Washington Post. The number of missions in which suspected Palestinian militants were tracked and killed by Israel doubled in 2001 to 72. The toll of civilian bystanders is equally high. Today, we execute people without trial. It's so simple. That's what we're doing. No one shows evidence to anyone, quote unquote.
Slightly more than one of every 10 Palestinians who has died during the conflict was killed during a targeted killing operation, data shows. Quote, targeted killing is not only very valuable, Major General Giora Eilen, chief of planning and policy in the Israeli military, and one of its most senior officers said in a recent interview, quote, if we could not use this method in areas like Gaza, where we do not control the territory, we could not fight effectively against terrorist groups, end quote. Because for the Israeli, for the Zionist, every Palestinian is a terrorist because every Palestinian is struggling for their national liberation. Quote, in 2003, the main weapon the Israeli army has in its arsenal against terrorism is the assassination policy, end quote, said Michael Sefard, a Tel Aviv attorney representing the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel. Ralph?
The article in the Washington Post continues. In the spring of 1973, a group of Israeli commandos guided a speedboat up the Mediterranean coast and scrambled ashore in Beirut. Their mission, to assassinate three of the Palestine Liberation Organization's top officers in their downtown apartments. The leader of the team, Ehud Barak, commander of Israel's special forces, wore a long dark wig, false breasts, and women's clothing. He and his men gunned down all three Palestine Liberation Organization officials, according to accounts confirmed by Barak, who later became Israel's prime minister. Israel's history of assassination stretches back decades. In the early 1970s, prominent members of Palestinian organizations were assassinated in rocket attacks and car bomb explosions. Prime Minister Golda Meir authorized her hit squads to locate and kill Palestinians across the area. In the fall of 2000, as the Second Intifada began, Barak, as Prime Minister, authorized security forces to assassinate Palestinian militants. Before noon on November 9th of that year, Hussein Abayat, a 37-year-old father of four, was driving his gray Mitsubishi through the West Bank village of Beit Sahur on the eastern edge of Bethlehem. We stayed in Beit Sahur, Maya and I, in last May with many friends in the area. Neighbors found his charred body melted to the driver's seat. Anti-tank missiles fired by Israeli gunships had slammed into his car. Two women, Aziza Zubran, 58, and Rahma Hindi, 54, who'd been standing on the roadside, died, their bodies burnt black by the missiles. Abayat was identified by Israelis as an activist associated with Palestine leader Yasser Arafat. As the Intifada intensified under Barak's successor, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, the military's reliance on assassinations, the Washington Post continues, and the scope of the targets expanded, buttressed by advances in intelligence gathering and adaptations of high-technology military equipment and weaponry. The Israeli government has not released official data on targeted killings. The Palestinians were killed at random and carried out the targeted killings. Israeli forces have lifted some of their tactics from the murky world of covert operations and have now integrated them, the Washington Post continues, into daily missions of regular troops. Several types of security units participate in a single assassination operation. The mission will be directed by Shin Bet, the country's civilian security agency, with military commandos providing the muscle, and army tanks and Air Force helicopters supplying the firepower. An example of such a coordinated hit, three militants driving on an isolated road north of the West Bank city of Jenin were ambushed by eight undercover Israeli operatives, four armored personnel carriers, and three helicopters. Two of the suspects were killed. Palestine hospital officials stated one of the men, Wasim Ahmed Sabana, 23, was shot seven times. Other missions have relied more on finesse. In 16 incidents, Israeli operatives or Palestinian agents cooperating with the Israelis plant explosive devices in telephone booths, cars, and other relocations, and then detonate them by remote control, sometimes from unmanned drones or helicopters. because such operations are carried out in secret by security services, Israeli officials usually deny involvement and attribute the explosions to accidents caused by Palestinians. Military officials stated that they use targeted killings or assassinations when they are unable to arrest a militant. Human rights officials state that Israel has made thousands of arrests since the Intifada began and challenge the claims that targets must be killed rather than arrested. Indeed, one-third of all suspected militants killed in targeted assassinations have been hit with missiles fired from aircraft. In one instance, a 2,000-pound bomb dropped by an F-16 fighter. Two-thirds of all the unintended victims were killed in these airstrikes. In other words, every time they assassinate a young militant, they kill random numbers of civilians who are in the proximity to this targeted killing.
Ralph, the assassinations go from the young militants up to the primary leaders of the Palestinian movement. It was well known that the Israelis continuously had attempts to assassinate Abu Ammar, Yasser Arafat. In 2003, Deputy Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, who is now the Prime Minister, revealed that Israel was considering a targeted killing of then-Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat. Quote, in my eyes, from a moral point of view, this is no different than the eliminations of others who were involved in activating acts of terror. That was quoted by the New York Times. However, we must note that the assassination attempts of Yasser Arafat went on continuously, and consequently Yasser Arafat, until the time of the establishment of the Palestinian Authority, did not sleep in the same place two consecutive nights. He always moved. And in Beirut in 1982, when there was nonstop bombing by the Zionist state in its attempt to occupy Lebanon, there were bombings continuously anywhere there was any so-called intelligence that Yasser Arafat was in a place. And in one time, an implosion bomb was dropped. An entire building, high-rise building, was leveled, and there were only two survivors of the occupants of this apartment building, a man, an elderly man, and a young boy who happened to be thrown from the balcony where he was standing. And there was a huge cavernous hole, and we saw this, and we saw the two survivors. It was terrible. And this went on place after place in Beirut in 1982, and consequently everywhere that Abu Ammar went. In 2004, Hamas co-founder Ismail Yassin was killed in Gaza by a missile fired from an Israeli helicopter. And during the 2006 war against Lebanon, the attempt of the Zionist state once again to occupy Lebanon and this time destroy Hezbollah, which was the resistance movement, Israel again tried to gather intelligence information to pinpoint the whereabouts of Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah, and his top aide. And then the Israeli aircraft attacked a bunker in southern Beirut, where it believed the Hezbollah leaders were hiding, just as I mentioned they had done against the buildings of Beirut where Yasser Arafat might have been. And they pounded it with what was described as 23 tons of bombs. 23 tons of bombs. There is no end to the lengths to which the Zionist state will go. Ralph.
Well, Maya, in fact, in an article in an international consortium of investigative reporters by Yossi Melman, an Israeli journalist, on the 30th of May of this year, it's very instructive. Operation Targeted Killings. The U.S. is emulating Israeli anti-terrorist policy, and it demonstrates that the Zionist tactic of setting up the category of terror to describe anybody who they want to demonize and then allowing all things to be done to those people, from kidnapping to torture to the removal of habeas corpus, and specifically assassination, is now the policy of the United States itself. Israel, quote the articles, describes uses assassination as a national security method, and it goes back for decades. One important element is that Israeli...
Ralph, we have to say that Melman, an Israeli himself, be he considered himself liberal, talks about going back decades. Assassination has been the modus operandi of the Irgun, of the Haganah, of all the Zionist movement from its inception. That has been one of the primary methods of the Zionist state, assassination and targeted executions.
Yes, you kill any random political opponent. You have the authority and you arrogate to yourself the right to murder. It's state terrorism. It's state murder. It's state assassination. And, of course, it is, as you've been saying, Maya, it defines the Zionist state, which is, in fact, a terror apparatus against the survival of the Palestinian people. And any who are involved in supporting this movement for the liberation of Palestine, for national self-determination of any nationality on any soil in any part of the world are defined as eligible for the use of this method of extrajudicial killing, execution, assassination.
Because by virtue of being a Palestinian, by virtue of having a sense of self-determination, by virtue of having a sense of national liberation, you are an enemy to Zionism.
Well, the Melman piece states Israel's use of assassination goes back decades, and one important element of the tactic is that Israeli assassinations have been directed at foreigners defined as state enemies. That includes officers in Arab armies, scientists who work on Arab projects, Palestinians, and indeed even Israeli intelligence agents who included Palestinian collaborators, who would then be executed outside of Israel's borders, in the occupied territories. It's a continuous, ongoing, defining element of the operations of the Zionist state.
Ralph, let's look at some of these that Melman describes. In 1977, the Mossad used a Palestinian collaborator to provide Wadia Haddad, an operative of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, with poisoned chocolates. He died the following year from what appeared to be leukemia. A year later, an Israeli intelligence agent in Beirut triggered a car bomb that killed Salema, who had been a target of an operation that took place in Norway and backfired when five Israeli agents, who were later convicted by a Norwegian court, although they only served short jail sentences, they had assassinated someone else who they thought was this man, Hassan Salema, who was a senior officer in the PLO Special Operations Unit. And in fact, the Norwegians caught them because this was a case of mistaken identity. In 1992, Israeli helicopters flew to Lebanon and used missiles to assassinate Saeed Abbas Mousavi, who was a Hezbollah secretary general. In 1995, Mossad agents in Malta shot to death Dr. Fatih Shaki, leader of the Palestinian group Islamic Jihad. And in 1997, another Mossad poison plot in Jordan nearly killed Hamas leader Khalid Mashal. But once again, this targeted killing attempt backfired, as it had in Norway. The plot was discovered by the Jordanian government, which compelled the Israelis to provide Mashal with an antidote. The incident supposedly had damaged relations between Jordan and Israel. And then Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu agreed to cooperate with a parliamentary inquiry into the secret Israeli policy of targeted killings, an inquiry which had the conclusion that the assassinations carry heavy and damaging weight, although they provided guidelines. The assassination killings go on even more today than before. They are part and parcel. They are the Weltanschauung of Israeli policy. That is, they are part and parcel. They are an integral part of Israeli policy. So we have targeted killings on and on and on again.
In 1977, to quote the year that you were describing, the Mossad used a collaborator to provide Wadia Haddad, a leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, with poisoned chocolates. He died the following year from what appeared to be leukemia. Now, what that indicates is that anybody who is part of the political opposition of any component, of any element of the Palestinian movement, can be and is selected for assassination. They flew it to Lebanon. They used missiles to assassinate Sayed Abbas Mousavi, the Hezbollah secretary general. They shot to death Dada Fatih Shikaki, leader of the Palestinian group. It goes on and on. And what we have to make clear here is that when the American legendary political activist and editor of Covert Action Information Bulletin, Lew Wolf and Philip A.G., began to publish, and this was with respect to the United States, those involved in assassinating and executing political opponents on behalf of the Central Intelligence Agency. The so-called Lew Wolf law was passed by Bush Sr. It made it a crime to out operatives of covert services of the United States. In other words, this law on the basis of which Valerie Plame and Joseph Wilson and the outing of their operations has been used to go after the people who outed them derives from an intent to silence and shut down any exposure of this crime against humanity, which is the use of execution and assassination as official policy. You don't bring someone to trial, and after all, what are you trying them for? They are trying us. That is, us, brothers and sisters. We who oppose illegal wars and crimes of imperialism. We who oppose the genocidal policies of the rulers and the ruling class of the United States. We who try to expose the Nazi-like apparatus of covert ops, assassinations, coups d'etat, and the attempt to destroy popular movements that seek the independence, national liberation, emancipation of oppressed peoples. We who oppose this methodology are then, in turn, targeted for elimination. That's who is targeted by the Zionist state from its inception, those who resist the imperial, colonial settler subjugation, ethnic cleansing, oppression of the Palestinian population at large.
Ralph, as you mentioned in the Molly Moore, the article Israel's Lethal Weapon of Choice, published in by the Palestine Media Center, there are many methods for targeted assassinations. And what she says is one-third, however, of the suspected militants killed in targeted assassinations were hit with missiles fired from aircraft. And in one case, as you mentioned, a 2,000-pound bomb dropped by an F-16 fighter plane. But more than two-thirds of all unintended victims, that is the bystanders, what's called collateral damage, were killed in these airstrikes, making them the most controversial of the targeted killings. But aside from the missiles and aside from what used to be the helicopters, they now use missiles from F-16s. They used to use the attack helicopters. They also use the cell phones, as you mentioned, and telephone booths and other form poison, as the poison chocolate, and other appointed assassination squad, as you saw with Ehud Barak, where they dressed up as women. But also during the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, they would dress up as Palestinians walking through the streets and have assassination teams. Ralph?
Remember that the Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Olmert, who had been mayor of Jerusalem when he was one of the principal figures in the ethnic cleansing of the surrounding areas, and then as deputy prime minister, revealing that Israel was targeting the execution of Yasser Arafat, and he stated again, we quote, "In my eyes, from a moral point of view, there is no this is no different than the elimination of others," stated Olmert for the New York Times. Now, that By the way, the open declaration by the Deputy Prime Minister of Israel at the time, now the Prime Minister, that Yasser Arafat would be and was continuously the target of assassination and elimination, led to the conclusion by the family of Yasser Arafat that Israel was involved in the poisoning and the murder of Yasser Arafat, which is by now pretty clearly established as the way in which Yasser Arafat, in fact, died. This is the hallmark of a Nazi-like apparatus. This is why Yeshua Leibovitz, the leading theologian in Israel, had described the Zionists as Judeo-Nazis. They will do anything and everything. They will kill, they will execute, they will assassinate. There is no semblance or pretense at any formal restraint. It is a terror state designed to sustain the subjugation of an entire people. And indeed, the targeted dismantling of each sovereign country and sovereign state in the Arab East, which has been Israeli policy and now formal and full-fledged is imperial policy, for which the assassination of political opponents is an indispensable element.
Ralph, there is a book, Crimes of War, written by Don Oberdorfer. 1999 was the publication date. And in it, Oberdorfer states, quote, "It is, of course, unlawful to execute an accused person without giving him or her a fair trial first," end quote. Yet what we have in the Zionist state, Israel, routinely extrajudicial executions, what they call targeted killings of so-called wanted Palestinians through air raids on densely populated refugee camps, undercover death squads, and this is going on without any protest from the international community. And what would you expect? It is the imperial collaboration with the Zionist state, which in effect does its bidding by preventing the revolutionary upsurge throughout the Arab East, not just the struggle of the Palestinian people, but the revolutionary upsurge in Egypt, in Jordan, in Saudi Arabia, in Lebanon, in every country of the Arab East.
And Maya, what we have emphasized over the years that we've been broadcasting and long before we started taking aim is that the role of the Zionist state and of imperialism with respect to political opponents is very clearly one of extermination. That has been how political opponents like the great poet and Marxist analyst Rassan Kanafani were dealt with. He was assassinated. And indeed, the former Mossad chief, Zvi Zamir, stated, "When we in the Mossad realized that the Europeans had no intentions of dealing with terrorism, by which they mean political opposition, we persuaded Premier Golda Meir to allow us to act, even though it was unlawful from the point of view of international law, and to carry out sustained assassinations on foreign territory." What's interesting about the braggadocio and brazen declaration of the former Mossad chief Zvi Zamir is he stated that with respect to Munich, which was the moment when the Palestinian movement targeted Israeli athletes in Munich, and Zamir refers to the Steven Spielberg Weltschmerz about that event, his film Munich. He stated, "No, unlike Spielberg's representation, the motive of the Mossad in going after those Palestinian activists was not to disrupt the Palestinian terror network that might strike again. We targeted those."
No, Ralph, he's saying that it wasn't revenge.
Yes,
Spielberg
yes, yes.
is saying that the Mossad went after the Palestinians as an act of revenge. And in fact, what Zamir is saying, no, this was not revenge. This was cold-blooded, calculated maneuver.
Well, we targeted those who would oppose us in the future. Those who say that we are motivated by revenge talk nonsense. It is not in our vocabulary. We targeted those who are based on a list compiled by the Mossad as being effective leaders and opponents of Israel. They killed 9 Palestinians immediately thereafter, and they have made this the perpetual policy, execution of political opponents, which is not dependent upon involvement in armed struggle resistance at all, although that is certainly one of the elements of their assassination program.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Extrajudicial Execution and the Zionist Weltanschauung. It is part 5 of our ongoing series about the Zionist state and its attack against the Palestinian people. Ralph?
An important article, Maya, occurred and appeared in the Washington Post by Laura Blumenfeld on August 27, 2006, called In Israel, a Divisive Struggle Over Targeted Killing.
And Ralph, before we discuss this article, I suggest all our listeners read the article in its entirety. It is one of the most Kafkaesque articles I have ever seen in the bourgeois press. It is unbelievable.
In its sentimental rationalization, justification, and virtual worship of the, not just the process of killing those who oppose the Israeli state, but in romanticizing the figures who order these assassinations.
And these are the primary leaders of the Zionist state.
The report came from the war room. The bomb was falling. Lieutenant General Moshe Yalon stared at the tiles on his floor, working out 2 plans. 1, if they die. 2, if they don't. The bomb, the one he'd been arguing over and deliberating all day, was plunging 10,000 feet from an Israeli F-16 toward a Palestinian home in the Gaza Strip, where guests sat eating rice and boiled chicken. Yalon was hoping it would be their last lunch. With targeted killings, it was rarely that simple. It was September 6, 2003, a time much like today, of open conflict between Israel and Hamas, which Israel, the United States, and Europe had labeled a terrorist group, and which had controlled the Palestinian Authority through their
election,
through their success in the elections. 8 primary Hamas leaders had been targeted. And this is what Israeli intelligence stated. It was like bin Laden, Zarqawi, and Zawahiri in a meeting, and we had the capability to hit them, said Lieutenant General Dan Halutz, the Air Force chief, now the military chief of staff. The Hamas leaders had gathered in a private home in a crowded neighborhood when the children were out at school. A massive strike would mean civilian casualties. We had to decide if we were going to take them out or not, said Halutz, who said he supervised 80 to 100 targeted killings as the head of the Air Force with a 90% success rate. In Israel, targeted killing is now a select weapon. In Lebanon last month, Israel targeted officials that held Hezbollah's leadership, pounding it with targeting a house with 23 tons of explosives. The hit list in Gaza, Halutz stated, consists of 15 names.
15 names? That's just the tip of the iceberg. There is a book, a notebook that is kept, and that has over 1,000 names. The targeted assassinations, with the collateral damage of those children, the wives, the people who are just passerbys, is supposedly of concern to the Israeli leadership. And consequently, Aser Kasher, a philosophy professor, was asked to work on ethical guidelines for fighting terrorism. And also, Major General Amos Yadlin, chief of military intelligence, asked a mathematician to write a formula that would determine, in algebra, acceptable civilian casualties per dead terrorist. They call it the algebra of assassination.
On September 6th, when Israel had the chance to destroy the Hamas leadership, they described a clash over the algebra of assassination. 2 officials, Israel's leaders in combating terrorism, took opposing sides. Avi Dichter, head of the Shin Bet, Israel's internal security agency, pushed far an all-out assault against the Hamas gathering. They're the terrorist dream team, Dichter declared. But for Yaalon...
That's Lieutenant General Moshe Yaalon, who was the military chief of staff from 2002 to 2005.
He cited the Talmudic precept, "If he comes to kill you, kill him first." "Ah," he said, "but it conflicts with a biblical commandment, 'Thou shalt not kill.'" 3 layers later, the men were still engaged in debate. "It's still open between us," Dichter said, throwing a scolding look at Yaalon. During a December 2005 forum at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, "This isn't settled." Now, the article makes clear that Yaalon is not opposed and, in fact, is himself involved in executions and assassinations. The only issue at hand was whether the targeting of the leaders of the Hamas, as the targeting of other Palestinian leaders of the PLO or all other factions in the Palestinian movement, whether this targeting should occur when massive numbers of civilians would be killed simultaneously.
In fact, Ralph, it is Yaalon who carries the notebook. That is what it is called, quote, the notebook, in which targets are drawn up from a pool of names. It's on a pad of paper, and the numbers range from 300 to 1,000 Palestinians. Every militant is color-coded, red, black, or green. And when a target, that's what the Palestinians are called, targets, are hit, Yaalon draws an X across his page.
While he rolls his eyes to heaven and cites the Talmud and the Bible.
And he says, "When I sign the order, my hand trembles."
"This is impossible," Dichter said as he read the intelligence. It was Friday morning, September 5, 2003. Dichter had been handed a secret report stating that Hamas's strategists would meet the following day. They were marked men. They surrounded themselves with children. They lived in cellars. They moved only at night and had stopped using cars or the telephone. Why would they risk it? Dichter recalled thinking about their having met. We suspected it wouldn't be true. As head of Shin Bet, Dichter, a dynamic, sturdy, slate-eyed man who prefers quips to poetry, was busy that morning with other targets, a Hamas fighter, a rocket operator. They call, another source called confirming the gathering, and Dichter mobilized a task force of wiretapping experts, of spy drone technicians, of Palestinian informants. Separate the signal from the static. He notified Yaalon, the military chief of staff, who called Shaul Mofaz, the defense minister, for permission for the hit. Mofaz told him, "A once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I approve." But then Mofaz had seen the maps. "The neighborhood is impenetrable. There are civilians everywhere. How are you going to do it?" In the prime minister's office, Major General Yoav Gallant, the military secretary, informed Ariel Sharon. The prime minister banged the table with an open palm. "Get them," he ordered.
This is the most important operation. As military chief of staff in the 1990s, Ehud Barak had organized undercover units called Cherry and Samson. These were soldiers who dressed like Arabs and killed Palestinians. I spoke of this earlier in the program. When Barak, as prime minister, reactivated targeted killings in 2000. In fact, the article says reactivated, but targeted killings have never stopped. He said, quote, "The first were urgent, but after I said, we need rules." An aide exhumed 4 typed pages in a dusty plastic sleeve, and these were the rules of engagement. And Barak asked Daniel Reisner, a legal advisor to the Arab-Israeli peace talks, to determine whether targeted killings were legal. And here again, we have the Kafkaesque notion. And this has gone on similarly in the United States, where we have the Attorney General ruling that it was okay to torture. So here we have, in the Zionist state, Reisner, who agonized, according to the Washington Post, for 6 weeks, saying that the targeted killings were, in fact, legal. Reisner concluded it's legal, and he gave 6 conditions. six ridiculous conditions. Unlike prison sentences, targeted killings cannot be meted out as punishment for past behavior. It is for deterrence. But you have deterrence. Everyone is subject to deterrence because by nature of being a Palestinian, you are an enemy.
Well, what's interesting about this article in the Washington Post, when describing Daniel Reisner, let us make very clear what the role of Daniel Reisner is. He is the legal advisor to Arab-Israeli peace talks. See, this is the guy who is giving legal advice about these so-called negotiations for peace, which we've described continuously as pacification. This very figure is the man who is creating the conditions for, in the sense of formal legality, for targeting Palestinian leaders as combatants. The senior cabinet ministers approve each attack. Then the operations are limited to areas not under Israeli control. The targets are identified. Unlike prison sentences, targeted killings are not meted out as punishment for past behavior.
That's right, Ralph. Anyone is a target if they are considered, quote, a future threat.
It's not an eye for an eye, Dichter said. It's having him for lunch before he has you for dinner. Quote, unquote. On dinner time, September 5, 2003, Dichter's intelligence network had narrowed the location of the meeting of the Hamas leadership. Only two Hamas members were trusted enough by the leadership to host the meeting, the Washington Post states. One lived in a private home, the other in a 12-story apartment building. It was 8 p.m. and Dichter placed a conference call. I'll be back in a few minutes. Mofaz, the defense minister, said to his wife and four children on Friday evening as he ran from the table to pick up the gray-coated phone. He had just recited the blessings over the wine and the challah bread, the Washington Post informs us. Yalon, also on the conference call, said the Air Force was preparing a plan, Operation Automatic Gear. What is Operation Automatic Gear? The automatic assassination of leadership of Hamas's political and military figures. Any who opposed the Zionist state. Those who had just won an election in Gaza immediately targeted for assassination.
And, Ralph, we must say that one of them is Ismail Haniyeh, who was to become the prime minister of the Palestinian Authority.
On 6 a.m. on September 6th, Dichter was driving to the command center, a windowless room that glowed with computer screens and smelled of the Friday night leftovers that the agents had brought in. Chocolate arugula and egg salad, says the charming Washington Post. The intelligence was good. The mood was good. By tracking delivery trucks and following them, Israeli agents determined that the Hamas meeting would take place at a single-family home and not the 12-story apartment building. Engineers ran computer analyses to prepare the house for destruction, assessing the cement, the structure, and the size of the rooms. Yalon woke up early and anxious. Dichter was intuitive. Yalon was analytical. The chief of staff jogged down to the Mediterranean and crashed into the waves. He swam out half a mile, pushing against the swells, contemplated the day's decisions. It kept my head busy with fresh oxygen, Yalon stated, according to the Washington Post.
Yes, you have to understand that every day, Yalon told Laura Blumenfeld, he has to decide who will live and who will die. Quote, who is a ticking bomb? Can we arrest him? Who was a priority? This guy first or this guy first? And once a week, military intelligence and the Shin Bet proposed new names. At first, the list was limited to bombers themselves, so Yalon says. But several years later, it was expanded to others, that is, those who might prepare attacks.
And
he says,
yes.
I call it cutting weeds. I know their names by heart. Hundreds of them. Hundreds and hundreds of them. And if they have kids, well, it does cross my mind. How many children do they have?
It's hard to fathom, Yalon said. It became routine to look into their eyes in the photo. In certain cases, it's unbelievable. He looks so naive, a young man with a baby face, especially a 16-year-old who we've targeted. It's beyond imagination.
And, Ralph,
quote unquote,
this is a list that is prepared by Yalona, a list of 1,000 people. But then Daniel Reeser, the legal expert, is often consulted. And not only is he consulted, then the prime minister of the Zionist state, approves a target. And then the name is transferred from the notebook to a short list typed on a laminated card. And commanders carry the card in their pocketbooks, along with their bus passes and their keys. Each target is assigned a file with instructions on when and where he can be killed. Now, this is a moving decision. They change when and where he can be killed. And specialist markup maps, green lines for open roads, and red lines for congested areas. An operation can take 200 people, Yalon said, thousands of man hours. It can cost up to $1 million per person. But when a target is hit, Reisner said, the feeling is complicated. Not really complicated. They do this day in, they do this day out. They do this year in, they do this year out.
And Maya, let me repeat. Reisner, who is being consulted and involved in all of these operations, is the legal analyst for the peace process, for the peace negotiations. That's who we are dealing with here. Not for, but the complication that Reisner claims for his feelings are not the same for Avi Dichter. After each success, the only thought we have is, okay, who's next? We really have a bottleneck, the former Shin Bet chief said. One day we completed a killing at 5 a.m. I said, well, what are we going to do for the rest of the day? Who do we get now? On September morning, on a Saturday morning, September 6th, six F-16s were waiting off the coast of Gaza. Mofaz, the defense minister, sat in his office. He changed the channel on his TV from CNN to footage of Gaza from a reconnaissance drone. By noon, several of Hamas's leaders had arrived at the home of Marwan Abu Ras, a religion professor. The Israeli cameras zoomed in to catch the details. Some came on foot. Some came by car. Some parked far away and walked, Mufaz recalled. Their faces were covered with kafirs, and they wore flowing clothes. A Shin Bet agent in the command center called out the identities of the men. It was a who's who of Hamas's leadership, Gabi Ashkenazi, Yalon's deputy, said. These are people we are hunting for years. It got intense, Yalon recalled. The reports. Here comes Mohammed Diif.
Here comes
Adnan al-Khul. Here comes Ismail Haniyeh. I pictured each one.
And then, Ralph, most importantly for the Zionists, there came Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the paraplegic who was Hamas's spiritual leader. And as his wheelchair disappeared into the house, an agent called the Sheikh by his code name, the Carcass.
The Carcass. The Carcass. Yalon said to the Air Force chief, ready? They called Sharon in his ranch. They told him we're about the gathering. Sharon was setting up for his grandson's 6th birthday party. He said, are the planes ready?
Now, this is where the debate came in. Should they use a half-ton bomb? They were afraid it wouldn't finish the job. Or should they use a one-ton bomb? But that would blow up the neighboring apartment building, which was filled with dozens of buildings.
Families.
You have to understand that they used a one-ton bomb on another killing in Gaza, a killing that drew a great deal of international attention when many people were killed. And now the question was, do we use a half-ton bomb, that is a 1,000-pound bomb, or do we use a one-ton bomb, 2,000-pound bomb? They had worked for decades together, Dichter and Yalon. They had traveled together without passports deep into Arab lands.
In secret commando units, assassination squads.
That's right.
Both
Dichter and Yalon.
They are joined at the hip as cold-blooded assassins. While the Washington Post presents this little moral homily about the dialogue they have together, about what political fallout, will be at issue as they carry out their lists, their lists, their lists.
As Yalon said, how can we look in the eyes of our pilots if we kill innocent people? Come on. To Yalon, there is not an innocent Palestinian. And the collateral damage, the numbers the men had suggested, averaged 3.14 civilian deaths per dead so-called terrorist, Reasoner recalled. If the civilians were children, the figure was smaller. But more than half of all targeted operations are called off, that is, called off for the moment, and then proceed another day.
Yalon stated, "We won't get to the bottom of the barrel by killing the terrorists. We'll get there through education." What does he mean by education? You continue with the assassinations, and then you draw the educational conclusion that resistance is futile. Bend the knee. Dichter, he says, thinks, will kill, 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 kill. That's it. We've won. It won't work like that, Yalon says. The army has to consider the support of Israel's public that does not favor civilian deaths. We have to take into account international legitimacy. Dichter says, from an operational point of view, the one-ton bomb makes sense. No, this is not a fair fight, Dichter said. Never has been, never will be. The debate lasted for hours. What's the big debate, brothers and sisters? Half-ton bomb, one-ton bomb. The prime minister's gallant sided with Dichter. The defense minister sided with Yalon. Yeah, Dichter recalled, if you didn't have a strong heart, you'd have a heart attack. And then he states, how many civilian casualties are acceptable? The mathematician had failed to produce the formula. Reasoner, this is again the Reasoner who legally advises the peace process, stipulated that the targeted killing was legal, but that they should seek to minimize casualties amongst the civilian population at large to control the political fallout. The numbers the men suggested averaged 3.14 civilian deaths per dead terrorist. Yes, ma'am.
They decided that the house being three stories high, that perhaps they could use a quarter-ton bomb and destroy only the third floor where they thought the men were meeting. And this again became the debate now. Quarter-ton, one-ton, two tons. They decided a quarter ton. Sharon was in the middle of his grandson's birthday party, and he left it up to them, although he preferred the actual 2,000-pound bomb. Just get rid of them all. In 2 minutes, an F-16 roared over Abu Ras's house in Gaza. The house was surrounded by apartment buildings, as we said. For a combat pilot, the endless seconds between firing and impact can be terrifying, said Major Y. He's prohibited from giving his full name. Although he's performed 15 to 20 targeted killings from a Cobra attack helicopter, he was not the pilot that day. But he described the process. He said, you hit the target, you can barely breathe. You can barely breathe. You feel like you've lost 20 pounds because of the sweat. You feel bad, but you know what you did was necessary. Ralph?
Here is Yalon. At first, Apache helicopters fire helicopter anti-tank missiles. Then Yalon asks Rafael Armament Development Authority, a defense ministry affiliate, this is part of the military-industrial complex in Israel, which is the fourth largest arms manufacturer and in the world, a defense ministry affiliate to manufacture smaller warheads. A person isn't a tank, said Avigalor Rafael, who supervises a team miniaturizing missiles. They developed the Firefly, a warhead the size of a soda bottle. We want to kill all the terrorists and not little girls that get on CNN and then you can't explain it.
Ralph, that evening, the quarter-ton bomb was used. And what we had then was the quarter-ton bomb was used, and it destroyed the third floor. But in fact, the leaders were on the first floor. So what happened? Mufaz, the defense minister, recalled a colleague needling him that evening. "Boy, you made a mistake," the colleague said. And Mufaz retorted, "We'll get them later. We'll get them later." And in fact, they did. The Israelis killed Gul in October 2004 and Sheikh Yassin in March 2004 with, quote, "a missile in his lap," said an Israeli general. Abu Ras, the Hamas host, bought a new home. But in July, Deif, another one of the Hamas leaders, he survived another attack. But in February, you had Ismail Haniyeh, elected prime minister of the Palestinian Authority, and consequently, we will see, I'm sure, many targeted assassination execution attempts against Haniyeh. So this is what we have, the discussion that went on between Dichter and Yalon and Mufaz and Sharon saying, get them all. This is, as I said, a Kafkaesque discussion that was presented by Laura Blumenfeld in the Washington Post. In Israel, a divisive struggle over targeted killing. It's not a divisive struggle. They're all on the same page. All on the same page. Get them all. This has been Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Extrajudicial Execution and the Zionist Weltanschauung, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Ralph, last word.
Well, Maya, what the last word is that this is the signature of the murder state. It has to be removed from history and from existence. The end of the colonial settler state in Palestine is the only way forward for all civilized people.